Tragedy Academy, a show created to bridge societal divides in a judgment-free zone using candor and humor. My name is Jay. I'm super excited today. I'm here today with Bruce Brackett. How are you doing today, Bruce?
I am doing very well. I woke up on the right side of the grass. I made the wake-up list, and the opportunities are limitless from that. Jay, thank you so much for having me and to be a part of your podcast. It's an honor.
I'm just excited to have a seat and some popcorn to watch your journey. Like, you're one of those people that I get excited about coming on for the simple fact that they're authentic as authentic can be, right? That's how we're supposed to live on this rock. And you have a book coming out called How to Breathe While Suffocating. You want to tell us about that book? Tell us who you are, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Sure. Yeah. So hello, everyone. My name is Bruce W. Brackett. I am a recovering alcoholic and addict. I am an advocate for overcoming from mental health, addiction, and trauma issues. And I am all about spreading love, art, connectiveness, positivity, just being authentic and sharing and listening to other people's stories and connecting in a way that is really lacking in this world in so many different ways. I think that, being someone on social media, I find the yin and the yang of it. It has provided us with unlimited information at our fingertips so quickly, but it's also created this disconnect between human beings in their everyday life. So I try and spread positivity and love in a way that's very authentic. That's just where I'm at now, but that's not how the journey began for me. As we all, we all start somewhere.
And we have to. Say we don't have a story is to say we haven't been here at all.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And or that you haven't lived. All of us have lived, no matter what type of life or what you've experienced or what you may or may not have accomplished. You've lived.
Lenses. It's all lenses. Every experience is a prescription change, and no two people can see the same. You can't swap glasses at the dinner table. You can't swap glasses anywhere else when it comes to experiences in life. You got to listen to people. Bro, you have astigmatism. I don't. So that means when you look around, you see shit different. Why don't I just respect that, right? Why don't I just believe you and go, all right, well, show me what astigmatism feels like.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good way of putting it. And it's so true. We're all so uniquely different, living very similar existences on this planet, It really comes down to just being open-minded and accepting and embracing another person's existence, because it's equally impactful, even if it may not be impacting you in the same way that it does for someone else. You know, take what works for you, leave the rest. It doesn't mean that everyone is for everyone, but just to be loving and respectful of that creates the humankind in
it
unity.
It honestly does. There's that whole do unto others thing. And I'm not some guy that walks the religious path. I walk the spiritual and I take things as I see them. And there's something to be said about do unto others. And that's for the simple fact that I read this book or this paper one time that was talking about how we meet ourselves through other people across the span of our life. And that every interaction that you have with someone is just another version of you. And that you can learn from them and their experiences and experience them through yourself back and forth. And that you should respect it, because you wouldn't do something like that to yourself in those moments. Why would you do it to them? Right?
Yeah.
For me, that's how I've been consuming this show since this journey started for me about 4 or 5 years ago, interviewing people from all over the world in all different types of situations. And I found myself more often than not looking at them going, I see me. Like, I don't see you except for the fact that you are you, uniquely you. But the things that reflect back first are the things that I see myself in others, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. It's just taking that moment to process it and figure out what it means.
Yeah. And there's something that you just touched on that I think delves into a lot of, let's say, transphobia or homophobia. And when we are looking at something that might be different than us and it creates that panic reaction or like, this is different and I don't necessarily know what it is. It's like, well, are you maybe seeing something in yourself? Not saying that someone who is heterosexual and they're looking at
me of this. And everybody that listens to this show understands very much so. We have a repeat guest. Her name is Aiden, a trans artist that does some of the wildest stuff you've ever seen. But we've discussed openly in the past that I suffered from growing up in a small hillbilly town from a condition called gynecomastia, right? A lot of people may not know what that is. Some people do. It's a pronounced breast tissue in puberty, right? Mm-hmm. That's a fatal wound for a hillbilly kid in the middle of a redneck town that's straight.
Right? Yeah, I had things
thrown at me. I had people shame me, call me every F word for gay people you could possibly imagine. He, him, what, she, whatever it was. And at the time, I didn't understand why. Right. I just knew, why was I the person that had to take this on? I hated it. Made me a horrible person. So I say a lot of things that that you've experienced, I see in myself when I was looking through your past. I'm like, we come out of those moments in life hurt with fear defense mechanisms. Right. And we start doing things that are out of character to protect that child. And I did that for a long time. And then I sit here and I see someone like you before me with the strength and the vulnerability to say, hey, look, this is who I was. This is who I am. This is who I'm going to be. Guess what? They're all the same.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel that whole transphobia thing, it really resonates deep, deep with me for the simple fact that I just couldn't get away from it, like, at all. And it made me hurt for people to know that that was happening to someone who knew who they were.
Yeah.
That's a pain that I can't replicate. It gave me a lens that I honestly don't deserve.
But in the same token, I would imagine that it gave you the other side of it where you know what you don't want to tolerate and what you don't want to be putting tolerance out there. Yeah.
Zero tolerance, which gets me in trouble at times. But tell me about yourself. And what it was like going through that journey, knowing who you are.
Well, thank you for sharing that with me. I can relate in different ways. I too grew up in a very small ranching community in Montana, where if you were a different color, a different identity, if you were gay, if you had a disability, if you were different in any way, and you just weren't welcomed, and they would just, you know, like, kids in general are terrible with bullying.
And they're just protecting themselves. We live in this like Tetris world where we have to like place ourselves in a fixed position, no matter what our shape, you know, we'll even contort to it and hold ourselves there. And we have to tell other people that they're not as good, so we don't lose any of those lines between the two of us. We try to either hold them or stay on top of them with just pain and rhetoric and whatever you can think of to just make them feel bad so that they don't feel good next to you, so you realize that you're not happy.
Right. Yeah. And
just to go fuck.
Really? I know. Just to clarify, kids are not terrible. I didn't mean that in general. I'm just saying, you know, kids bully kids and they bully each other. I was bullied immensely, but I also bullied because I was hurt. So hurt people, you know, and healing people heal themselves as well as they heal others. Mm. And eventually you come to that in your own way, in your own timing. And I'm fortunate enough that it started to come to me in my late 20s, early 30s. Some people never get it.
That's early. Congratulations. That's a key that not many people get. And not many people recognize that is in their hand.
Yeah.
Everybody gets that key. They just don't use it.
You have access to it at any moment. You can literally change the trajectory of your human being existence at any moment. You are the engineer of your own outcome. So who do you want to be? be who you want to be right now, even if it's something in the future that you fantasize and you're like, I want to be that person. Start acting like them
Dude,
now.
You're already that person. Just go.
Just
it's
go.
That fragile.
Yes.
Yeah. The difference yes. between success and non-success is action. Simply that. Our egos are so fragile and made up that we can create completely different personalities and trajectories in life at the drop of a dime immediately. Why? Mm-hmm. Because time is a mental illness. Future in the past is something we contemplate in the now. Get the fuck yes. out of here. I'm going to go today. Today yes. is the moment. Yesterday happened today too. Tomorrow happened today too. So why yep. don't I just live all three of them right now and be grateful for what I have? And not worry about what anybody else thinks. And I only say these things because I got to remind myself every effing day that I'm yes. worth sitting in this chair and that I'm worth talking to people, that I'm worth just sharing space with other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The thing that we really forget is we're so busy just trying to get to where it is that we want to go or, you know, like today is tomorrow's yesterday. We don't need to get to the point where I'm not where I need to be in life, or I'm not where I think I should be in life. Calm down. The world is moving at 1,000 miles per hour.
Whose ideal that is.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a rough one. If you sit and ask, whose ideal are you trying to fill? Your own? Or
yeah,
the one
exactly.
that was given to you since birth?
Who are you going to accept yourself to be? And those are things that I really had to ask myself. So, you know, from the beginning, I was born into detox from drugs and alcohol, and I was from that taken home and to my birth family where we were with my older siblings. I'm the youngest of four older sisters, and we at that time in the 90s had one of the worst reported abuse cases in the state of Montana at the time. So we were removed by the state of Montana and put into foster care system and soon to be later on adopted, which in the foster care system, if you guys know anything about it, it really is not a cookie cutter program. Mm-hmm. Everyone has a different experience. And for the majority of people within the foster care system or in the adoption system, especially if they have siblings, they're separated and they go through many different foster homes. Some of them are fortunate enough to be adopted. Many of them graduate out of the foster care system at the age of 18 and were never adopted. My experience was not that with my siblings. We were in the foster care system very briefly, only went through two foster homes. The second one ended up being our adoptive parents. And
that's
we were
amazing.
We were really, really fortunate.
That's a truly amazing story. A lot of people don't get that, like you just explained.
They don't. So. They really don't. And I mean, the second we were removed from my birth family, the angels were with us. There was a higher power that was like, nope, you guys are going to start receiving good. And even though we were removed, the abuse was extreme. It was physical abuse, sexual abuse, neglect. Mm. My birth mom would disappear for weeks to a year on end and leave us with grandparents or abusive babysitters. Like you can paint the picture for yourself. Abuse is abuse on any spectrum. But just because you're removed from the trauma or the abuse doesn't mean that, okay, everything's better now.
Don't you love how people think that?
Yeah, it's not how it works. It follows you for a long time. You have to do the work for yourself. And we were fortunate enough that my adopted parents put us into trauma therapy immediately when we were placed with them. And it's a roller coaster. You know, recovery on any level is not a linear journey. It's again not cookie cutter.
Nope.
Go at your own pace, take your time, do what works for you, try all of the things.
Fuck
try
up
therapy.
Your own fuck ups. They're nobody's business but your own.
Yeah.
You effed up and did this or that because of whatever reason impacted you in the past. Everybody else looking in, it's like trying to judge fish in a fish tank. Right? Fucking, like that one did three more loops. Like, there's nothing going on in there. Just watch, right? Or maybe throw some empathy in here. Don't judge what's going on inside the tank from the outside of the glass.
Yeah. There's... No. Yeah. Judgment is... Oh, it is a poison that we choose to... And that we choose to take. And everyone is having an experience in this world, you know, just by looking at someone. You may or may not know anything of what it is that they're going through, what they have been through, what they've overcome. And it be kind, be open-minded, be loving, and not just to people that you get along with. Be loving and compassionate and open-minded to your enemies, to the people that you don't that you disagree with. Doesn't mean that you have to be best friends and keep them in your life, but they're a person too. And whether you're right or wrong doesn't make you any greater or any less than anyone else's experience. You know, it's one of my favorite quotes. Don't compare yourself to anyone because you will become bitter. Compare yourself to yourself and you will become so much better. Just keep moving forward with that. Be better than the version of yourself from 5 minutes ago.
Exactly.
Hello. And just
stop trying to achieve better and accept that you're amazing in the form that you are. Mm-hmm. Right? As soon as we start to love ourselves, and you know, I've had my struggles and grew up in a rural pasture with no refrigerator. We had a cooler for the longest time. Front door was boarded shut. You know, all that kind of happy crap. And it does stick with you, right? I use the analogy of the rope all the time. The rope is us. We come out a nice, clean piece of rope. And then throughout our lives, we'll cross through trials and tribulations. And we have a choice. With age, we don't necessarily get that choice. But as we grow older, we get a choice. Do we go through it? Or do we tie a knot in our rope and take it up later? Mm-hmm. Right? But what happens as you begin to tie those knots and tie those knots and tie those knots into the same rope becomes an just unusable mess, right? Yep. And then at what point can you do anything for yourself or anybody else there? No, you're worthless until when? The moment that you sit down and untie your knots. Yep. For me, that was meditation. Meditation allowed me to sit down, and everybody's got their own way, but for me, it was meditation. Sit down. And just let myself look at the knots, look at the knots, look at the knots, look at the knots until they start to come apart. There's a really cool phenomenon as you start to unravel knots. What happens? The deeper you get into it, the more knots unravel at the same time. The faster it comes apart, the longer the rope gets, really fast. The beginning sucks, right? Especially if it's like fucking thread. I think that's what mine was, just a big ball of thread. It was just that asinine, right? Mm-hmm. But you sit there and you pull them apart. If we go through things now and we say, you know what? This is going to hurt. This is going to fucking hurt, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't want it to hurt next year. Like, who saves all their vegetables in life to eat before they die? Fuck that.
That's so true. Am I wrong? No, not at all.
I don't want my broccoli.
I love that you bring up that rope metaphor. It's really, really beautiful. I use in my motivational speeches on stage, I have a very long chain, a really thick, heavy chain, and very similar to what you're describing. And, you know, you go, the chain is the line of your life. Mm. And when you go through life things are going to happen. It's inevitable. People are going to hurt Correct. You. You're going to hurt other people. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to learn. You're going to have successes. You're going to have failures that you learn from that allow you to get to your successes. It's all just a whole bunch of life, right? And on any of those experiences, the visualization that I do is I pick up the chain and I start to wrap it around my, I'm getting fireworks.
Oh, wow. Dude, that was amazing. Like, ever since they started enacting all of these Apple like emoticons, so those of you that are not looking or can't see, he just got fireworks, thumbs up, and everything in between based off of his hand motions. And I absolutely love it because you deserve those.
That was interesting. That pulled my attention for a second.
Sorry about that.
No, it's good. That was fun. So when these life experiences happen, I start to wrap the chain around my body or around my neck. And it's all about what it is that you want to carry with you through your life. And when you're done with the bullshit, you drop the chains. You know, it's another
beautiful metaphor.
It is. And the chain is heavy.
There's masks. And I love the analogy where you use shit covered helium balloons that you complain about.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about that. All of those issues that you have are voluntary because we make a choice to focus on them and give them life within our own life, right? And if they were just metaphorically a shit-covered balloon next to you, you would be walking up to your friends complaining about the smell of the balloons that you could literally let go. All you have to do is let them go and they will float away. But instead, you're wrapping them around your fingers, you're tying knots in them, you're trying to take those shitty balloons everywhere you go and tell everybody why you shouldn't smell like shit.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. What do you expect to happen, man? You know, you get what you focus on.
Absolutely. I love that. It's so true. It is so true. It's, you know, someone comes along in your life and they stab you in the back metaphorically, who hurt you? Well, they did. Okay. You go through life a little bit more and you still have that knife in your back. Who's hurting you?
They're not there anymore.
They're not there anymore. And you're allowing yourself to carry that knife in your back. Take the knife out. You don't need to, you
100%.
Know. So I do. I talk a lot about this in my motivational speeches and as a keynote speaker. But the thing is, and I really want to be clear within my book, I don't share that because this part of the journey in my book is just explaining and sharing my story more so in a storytelling way of what it was that happened to the point where I became sober from hardcore drugs. And then that's when the book ends. And then I have a second book that's going to be telling about really how it is that I started to do the work to get to where I am today with the negativity be gone and opening up and having positivity welcome into my life.
You are beyond positive and I love it. And it's not influencer positive. There's a huge difference. Like I listened to one of your, I think it was your NPR interview, where you were talking about, and I even wrote this down because it kind of threw me off for just a moment. And it was that there are certain days you feel silly running up to a camera in the woods, right? Because I think that we're taught that we're supposed to feel silly when we're being ourselves. Because I would argue that every time you run up to that camera and you let go of every other chain that you've been holding, that's why everybody loves looking in you and looking you right in the eyes, because that's the true time that you're being yourself. So if you do feel silly, it's because you probably are and you should be.
Yes.
That's the way I look at it. Sorry. That was important to me because I heard that. I was like, you know, I get it, you know, because I do this. I fucking hate videos where I talk to a camera. Won't do it. Hate it. I have been pushed by everybody on our team. Can't do it. You amaze me. You get in there and you bury your soul from 3 inches from the screen, whereas me, I couldn't have my life dependent on it. So give yourself some credit, man. It might feel silly, but at the same time, silly is somebody else's fucking benchmark, not yours.
Thank you for that. That you're so right. Thank you for that. It's
we need that.
Yeah, and you know, I might feel silly. Well, I am a silly person, and I'm serious when I need to be. I'm angry exactly. when I need to be. I'm happy when I need to be. I'm overcoming negativity when I need to be. We are human. We have the whole spectrum of all of it. And I really encourage anyone who's listening, don't try and be different. Don't try and fit in. Be exactly who it is that you are.
Mm.
And your life will go swimmingly. It doesn't matter what other people have to say or think about you. Hell, if they're thinking about you or talking about you, you're the focus of subject. Who cares if it's good or bad?
You represent everything they want to do.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the exact action, it's just simple authenticity. To stand up and be yourself slaps everybody in the face that is not willing to accept themselves while looking at you. They're just pulling you down because it's easier to stay in the victim chair than it is to step over their own shit and realize they're amazing in their own right.
Yes. Absolutely. With just piggybacking off of what you just said, you know, I'm sure that we've all heard or experienced the, could you tone it down a little bit when you're, you know, and it's not because you're too much. It's because they are uncomfortable and it's about them and they're projecting their limits onto you. It has nothing to do with who you are. It has nothing about you being too much.
You're being too or you.
You're, yeah, yeah. And that scares them and that makes them uncomfortable. So what? I'm sorry. Just be you.
Well, that's not sorry. I subscribe to the lighthouse, man. The lighthouse doesn't ask anybody for any help. It is a lighthouse. It shines its light. It doesn't fucking change anything with its entire process and people are guided by it. Stand up, be you. Let your flame, your freak flag fly, whatever the fuck it is, just be you, because there's probably a really good chance that the fact that you felt like high-fiving some weirdo in Target walking by you in his Dockers is because he needed a high five. You intuitively knew that. You knew that he needed something, but the only reason why you didn't give him a high five is because someone might laugh at you.
Yeah.
And to think that you denied somebody you. The only job that you're actually given, you're given one job. The rest of them are fucking self-imposed.
Yes.
Like, just be you, right? And that's what I see when you come on the screen. And I can also see that you share the pain. People don't understand that, like we were explaining, the trauma that comes from a background and a childhood like your own also creates micro understandings and intakes of your surroundings at any given moment. It means that you feel everybody's pain and everybody is dangerous.
Yeah.
Right? So you're looking for both ends of the spectrum at all times. And that's what ends up causing those pains that put us in the throes of addiction or ways to quiet the mind, you know, or self-loathing for what could have happened or what you did do because of the pain from before that. Dude, addictions are a nasty bitch. But they are, as well said by one of our former guests, addiction is a cry for an ascension.
It is. And it's a symptom.
It is.
You know, like, I mean, even though I was born an addict, I was born into detox from drugs and alcohol. Later on in life, I had the choice to numb myself because of the self-loathing, of the self-hatred, of something that I was feeling. So the symptom or what I thought was the solution to fix that was diving into drugs and alcohol. And was that solution? No, that was actually pouring more gas onto the fire. And it wasn't necessarily about that. I was running from myself, and the way that I did that was through addiction. And it's, again, you know, recovery in any respect, whether it's addiction, mental health, the physical recovery that you're going through, it is something that you don't necessarily have to be ready for, but be willing. And when you're willing, the readiness will come. And then that is when we're able to ask for help, even though asking for help for so many people is very uncomfortable and not natural. And we shy against that, whether it's in recovery or you started a new job that you know nothing about and you have to go through the training process and you're afraid to be like, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. Can you help me? Everyone has help in one respect or another. Everyone has to ask for help. You don't go through and become successful without having other people help you along the way. You know, we look at all of these incredible influencers or these really outrageously successful humans that have accomplished so much in their life. And we think, oh, well, you know, they figured it out on their own. No.
The Oscars. Nobody goes up and gets in front of everybody and gets their, you know, their little trophy and says, I thank me.
Right.
Unless they're a complete piece of shit or making a joke.
Right.
You can love yourself in that moment, but you don't get up and you start naming off all those amazing talents that gave you the tools in your toolbox to stand up in front of everybody and throw your passion out there.
So I'm actually nominated for the Cheer Choice Awards this year. And
oh, please do that.
When I go on stage and I accept my award, you know, I will totally just ignore everyone else in the room.
Please do a shout out to the Tragedy Academy when you do that.
Oh, that's so funny.
I think that's amazing, though. But honestly, that is the first person you should thank. On the list, shit, who's the one closest to you? Well, it's not like anybody else showed up every morning.
I definitely have to thank, and I don't disagree with you, but I definitely have to thank the universe for allowing me and providing me the withal or the, oh God, what's the word I'm looking for?
The wherewithal?
The wherewithal and the capability of getting sober. Because without my sobriety, I would have nothing. I wouldn't have my book. I wouldn't have my partner. I wouldn't have the property that I own. I wouldn't have my life, my health. I wouldn't have my relationships. Without my sobriety, I would have nothing. In fact, with the way that I was going, I would have been dead a long time ago had I not sobered up. You know, I mean, towards the end there of my active addiction provided me with my beginning. And I think that's so important for people to realize because we feel like it's going to be the end and it's not. You haven't even lived yet, you know? And towards the end there, I was overdosing and I got every STD under the sun. I was a sex worker and I was diagnosed HIV positive right before I was 21 with acute hep C pneumonia. Syphilis. I mean, I had it all.
You went for it. You lived life as hard as you fucking possibly could.
To the danger, dangerous side. And I did. And it was, you know, sometimes, oh God, what's the saying? Pain is the admittance of life. You know, when you really want to start living your life and having it be a beautiful existence, sometimes you really have to go through that pain and you have to hit that rock bottom. And for me, I'm not a first time winner. I've hit my rock bottom so many times.
100%. And that's what I was going to ask. This question's been weighing on my mind. I like to use the analogy that we have to be on our knees to plant the tree, right? For who we're going to become, for our new life. What was that moment for you? And I understand that there are going to be repeat moments where we go back and have to, you know, redig the hole or add more water or try again and all that kind of stuff. I get that. Mm-hmm. But there's a mindful moment in an addict's life where they go, wait, I can't do this any longer.
Yeah.
Do you have a moment in time that you look back to?
I do. I, you know, like you said, I have several. because I had to go back and relearn a lesson because I didn't learn it the first time. But when I became sober from crystal meth, that was my drug of choice, with crack, cocaine, ketamine, MDMA.
I'm from Florida, man.
You name it.
I've been around this for a long time. I've dealt with it in my family before. I've seen the throes of meth addiction. I understand the withdrawals that come with it, the cravings, the dreams, the things that it's one of the worst drugs on the planet because it's all manufactured.
It's literally, it's a bitch. So in the end, I remember it vividly and painfully. I was already reaching out for help. I was already in outpatient rehab and I was attending the meetings, going to 12-step programs, and I was still slipping and I was still relapsing. You know, it's not like I just was cold turkey and the rest was great. That's not how it was for me. I was slipping a lot in the beginning, and on June 12th of 2014, I went out to hook up with someone and I took a few puffs off of their pipe thinking that it was meth, and it probably was, but it was most definitely also mixed with something else. And almost immediately I just started vomiting and hugged the toilet for an hour, and we clearly did not hook up. But the amount of pain that was pulsating in my brain, it felt like my brain was melting out of my ears, and it was unbelievably painful. And I, you know, this was beyond a migraine. This was beyond it.
It was terrifying. It sounds like
it was absolutely terrifying. I'm in an unfamiliar hotel with a stranger, and I am $30 of a cab ride away from home, and I really don't have money. And, you know, like, in just a very unsafe environment, to the point where, you know, he kept smoking, and it got to a point of me, like, I was no longer throwing up anything. I had to chug water just so that I could get something out of me without dry heaving. And he got to a point where he looked at me and he's like, you have to leave. Like, this is dumb. And I was like,
classy.
Thank you so much for your help.
Classy.
You know, like, yeah.
Didn't even hold your hair. What an asshole.
Yeah, no.
That's your job in this moment.
Clearly seeing that I was having an allergic reaction to whatever it was that I was smoking, didn't, you know, but this is what you do when you're in active addiction. You're extremely selfish and you don't care.
Impulsive as all hell.
Yeah. So luckily, I was able to get myself home by a cab ride. I guess I had enough for the cab. And the next day I woke up still very much hungover from the night before, but my head wasn't like pulsing anymore, but I was definitely in the withdrawal process. And I took everything that I had affiliated with it, the pipe, the drugs, the torch, photos, like, you know, I took anything that had to do with it. And I went to the only mausoleum cemetery in Manhattan, which was just a few blocks away from my apartment in Harlem. And I went and I sat on the top of this hill, which was domed over one of the mausoleums. And there was this vent in the ground with this rock that I still have to this day. And I took the rock and I crushed up everything that I had and I just brushed it down into this vent. And I guess it went down into the mausoleum. Like, so
the poor guy down there that's in the crematorium getting hit with like their old pipe residue and stuff.
I got the ghost high. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
I'm with you. that's an amazing moment.
I let it go and I had my own like burial service for my addiction. And very Beautiful. Soon after that, it started to rain. And it was like I was being washed away and cleansed and released from that. And I've been sober from it ever since. So of June 13th, 2014, we're approaching 10 years. And since then, I have painted this portrait, this abstract portrait of what I call crystal stuck in the rain, of my vision of what it was that I see my active addiction at that time, of what I would put it in a form of a portrait. And she's beautiful. Like, really, she's vibrant.
Your art is amazing, by the way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You've probably seen her then. She's like, her hairline.
I was going to ask. It's a very over. Unique looking yeah. features, the face, the whole nine.
Yeah,
I'm glad that you're describing this because I had this question. I was like, what? It's very intriguing. It's almost like kind of like when you look at the Mona Lisa, there's something that makes you continue to look at it.
Oh my God.
I'm not saying you're Mario, but I mean, feel that way. You know, it's an amazing picture, but there's more behind the eyes.
Yeah.
And more behind the picture, because the eyes really aren't.
Yeah. And that's the thing, though, is like in some of the versions that I've done of her, her hair is kind of separated, so you can kind of peek into mm-hmm. her soul. But, you know, her cheekbones are very sunken in and very elaborate because she's a meth addict, and she's mysterious because her eyes are hidden from her hair being in front of her face, but she's really vibrant and colorful and beautiful in the same regard.
Most addicts are.
Because there is that beauty inside of everybody, no matter what it is that you're facing, you too can overcome and recover. You just have to listen to that light that's inside of you. And that's what saved me towards the end. And in the hotel, and that next day, I chose to listen to that little light, even though it was almost extinguished. I chose to listen to it more than it doesn't. And it might get really, really dim.
It'll look like an ember.
But no, if you choose it and you listen to it and you hold on to it with everything in your being, it becomes a bonfire and it becomes like visible from space. And that's how that's how I want to live, you know? And now that I'm on this side of it, of my addiction, and I am doing what it is that I'm doing, there are many people, not saying that everyone has to do this, but for me, now that I'm on this side of it, I find it to be my responsibility to go back with buckets of water for those who are still left in the flames, which is why I do what I do on social media. It is, it's not about the views. It's not about people following me. It's not about that. I'm very blessed and I'm honored that that comes from it. That's just one of the gifts, but it's not about that. It's about being an advocate for those who are left behind. Someone did that for me. Now that I'm on the side of it, it's my turn to pass that on. That's what it's about. And when I see the response from thousands of people just who really get it, and they look past the outfit, or they look past the fan, you know, or the silliness, and they actually listen to what...
I ordered a shirt today, by the way.
Did you really?
Yes,
thank you
I
so
did.
Much.
Yeah,
thank
I was
you.
Super excited about it.
Which one did you order?
It's what is it? It says, Just Breathe, you're fantastic. What was it? I think it was a fan.
Yeah.
And it said, I want to say it was like, you've got this.
Just Breathe, you're doing a fantastic job.
That's
probably.
What it was.
Yeah.
I think so. It was really cool. I was like, I didn't realize the fan was your thing. Even when I bought it, I just liked what it said. It looked, you know, it was just a good motto. And I was like, I'll take that.
Oh, thank right? you.
Yeah, and I encourage more people to take a look. You have interesting stuff on there. It's not just a shirt or just a hat or a mug that comes from, you know, wherever. You have other things on there. You want to tell some people some of the stuff that's in your shop?
Yeah. So I've got my catchphrases on t-shirts, like the negativity be gone, which a lot of people resonate with. But I really try, and if I'm going to do merch, I want it to be a positive impact for not only the person who is purchasing it, but the person that you're walking by on the street when they read your shirt, that it sends a message to them like, hey, you're doing fine. Keep going. You're doing just a fantastic job.
Keep on keeping on.
Another one that I find really powerful is that let go of your past, because it's already let go of you. It happened 5 minutes ago. It's not even thinking about you anymore.
Why would you keep somebody in your apartment that didn't pay rent?
Yeah. Why keep that knife in your back?
Exactly.
Let go. We are not museums. Let go of the shit.
We sure do like to believe that we're something that should be on display.
Right.
We also think that we're supposed to be all sparkly too. No, I look like an old action figure that's been drugged behind a car with like one leg on it and the whole night. I don't give a shit.
No, you do not.
But no, metaphorically I do. But guess what? I got to play.
Yeah.
Who wants to be on a shelf in a box? There's no point. No. You've not been you yet.
Yeah.
You've been what everybody wants to look at. In fact, that just seems like a whole lot of work for somebody else's eyes.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'd rather observe. I'd rather live. I'd rather have the experiences.
100%.
You know,
you're an amazing human. And I have to tell you, and I haven't even told my dad this, I can't believe I'm saying it on the show, but your name is very special to me. It's my father's middle name, Bruce.
And really?
It's going to be my son's middle name.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, wow.
So it just everything kind of happens for a reason. I thought it was very interesting that, you know, you had the same name, because a lot of people don't, that name didn't survive as much as it should have.
No, it really didn't. And I have not met many Bruces.
It's a solid name.
Before. And, you know, it's really funny now actually looking back at it. When I was living in New York City and I was wandering around Christopher Street trying to buy weed off of someone. You know, when I was 19.
How the good old days.
Right? Yeah. When I was 19 and I did. I ended up finding this person somewhere on Christopher Street. And I bought him a piece of pizza and we sat down on the curb together and we ate pizza, and he was able to, he had a connection for someone that had weed. And I introduced myself and I was like, hi, I'm Bruce. And he was like, shut the fuck up. And I was like, excuse me. And he was like,
sorry.
Yeah. He was like, my name is Bruce. And I was like, what are the odds of that? You know?
You opened up a Bruce time warp or like a black hole. No two Bruces have ever met each other.
Right? I know. And I've only met. I mean,
I don't know what happened to the name. It was like Bruce Lee retired that bitch.
Right? Yeah.
He was like, it's mine. I'm out.
And no one else. Yeah. No. And it's funny because in the beginning of my book, I actually talk about it because I was named after Batman.
Love it.
And I mean, it says here, you will be meeting me. Oh, I'm going to do a little reading for
Please
you from
do.
How to
get
breathe
my
while
snaps ready.
You will be meeting me in a very personal way over the coming chapters. So before we begin, let's be clear about who I am not. Though my name is Bruce Wayne Brackett, I am not Batman. I may share a touch of his notoriety on social media, at least. And I am to help people in distress. Unlike Batman, I do not have access to the thrilling array of gadgets to banish villains. That being said, we are all survivors. But unlike comic book heroes, we face adversities that are often hidden and hard to identify. So on the very first page, I touch about that a little bit because my parents... I'm also named after my birth father, who shares the same Bruce Wayne, and then his last name is different, obviously, because I'm adopted. But yeah, that's always something that has really followed me. And now that I realize, and it wasn't even something that kind of came to be, but now I realize that I do kind of hold that bat symbol when people are in distress and I come running to them on the camera and I'm like, hold my hands and yep. breathe, you know.
I love when you do that.
For me,
absolutely love it.
It's not the bat symbol, but it is, you know,
is.
The fan. It's the fan. And it's just...
Oh, see, now you need to get a light, a searchlight with a fan on it and point it up into the sky.
Yeah.
And have a BWB.
Yes.
With, on the fan, pointed up into the air, like on the clouds. You got to make one of those. I don't care how you do it. Flashlight and a piece of cardboard, whatever it is.
Something.
But you should have a BWB fan signal.
When I create my next one-man show, I will definitely incorporate that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. Well, I want to give you a couple minutes to tell everybody where they can find your book, where they can find your all of your cool merch and your paintings, all of that art that you do.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. And to go back and answer your question.
Oh, sorry.
On my shop, I've got t-shirts. I've got my fan, which is my artwork on the fan with negativity be gone on it, my catchphrase. I have the Maria Poppins painting, which is Julie Andrews meeting her two characters.
I thought I recognized that.
Together.
I'm not the best yeah. for like childhood happy movies. Like it wasn't, we didn't watch Mary Poppins in my house.
Yeah.
I think that's Mary Poppins.
It's her two characters from Sound of Music and Mary Poppins. So it's Maria and Mary.
Ah.
Dancing together.
I wondered why they... Okay, so now it makes sense. I was like, half of it looked familiar, then the other half looked familiar, but I wasn't sure what I was looking at because I'm like, I know these people.
Yeah.
Are they the same people? Like, so now it makes perfect sense.
And it's just so fun. I've done that a few ways. I did one with Audrey Hepburn from Breakfast at Tiffany's and My Fair Lady, and My Fair Lady is offering a bouquet of flowers in exchange for maybe a pearl necklace that Audrey is wearing from Breakfast at Tiffany's. And it's just this cute little, and I think it's on my website, but it's this cute little interaction. And my fans, some artwork. And okay, so yes, again, my name is Bruce Wayne Brackett. You can follow along on the journey and just be a part of the BWB family members. Fanly members, and that's BWB.positivity on all social media platforms, meaning Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Threads. My website is BWBart.com, and I also have howtobreathewhilesuffocating.com, which is more geared towards the book. The book is being released April 9th across all platforms. It will be on the shelves April 9th as well in all bookstores, independent bookstores, mega bookstores, Barnes & Noble. It's available for pre-order now anywhere that books are sold. I highly suggest that if you are going to pre-order it, that you go through bookshop.org because
feel free to go to our website and click on bookshop.org. We already added your book to our list so
that
it can be available.
There you go. Yeah, bookshop.org is really, really amazing. They give back to independent bookstores all over. They've raised something like over $30 million for independent bookstores just by existing and having people purchase their books through them. So that is one way that you can just support independent bookstores as well as purchase the book. But of course, it's available on all major platforms, Amazon, Walmart, Target, Barnes & Noble, the list goes on and on. And it's available worldwide. It's being published by Wiley, which I'm very excited about. And I am going on a book tour and we're getting those dates.
Check you out.
Yeah, we're getting those dates lined up. And April is a big month. It comes out April. I get off probation in April from my DUI from last year. So like, yes to that. My book is being released then, the Cheer Choice Awards are then, and kicking off the book tour. So it's sobriety, man. I tell you, it's way better than being in the shadows.
Absolutely. I think there are a ton of people out there that would agree with you. And I think that, strength and vulnerability is the motto for this episode. I think that, the way that you express yourself rawly helps other individuals accept themselves for who they are, for every stumble, for every trial, tribulation, and their successes too. Authenticity is like stepping off of what you think is a cliff, but ends up being a curb with a blindfold on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just be you. It's the easiest thing to do. You don't have to remember a single mask ever again. All your masks are gone that day. All your voices, all the ways that you portray yourself in different scenarios are all gone. You're free at that moment. You have the ability to do anything and everything you want to. That flame suddenly gets fanned. It gets bigger. It becomes what it's supposed to be. It allows you to be the best you that you can be.
Absolutely.
And I appreciate you for being that person and showing others that there is a way to get through these things. Right? So thank you for that, Bruce. I genuinely appreciate you.
Thank you. You too, Jay. And I just want to share that I'm very proud of you, and thank you for doing what it is that you're doing. And it not only just on your podcast, but what you're doing for yourself in life, what you're doing for others, just as well as being you. You know, we have no idea who we're impacting, and it's one of the gifts of truly showing up and living your life. You know, and I'll end it with this, with my father's three do's, and I believe that you do this: to do your best, to do no harm, and to do for yourself every single day so that you too can eventually do for others. And if you can't do for others right now, that's okay. It just means that you need to be doing for yourself.
Absolutely. You can't give back until your own cup runs over.
Yep.
Simple as that. I appreciate you. Remember, everybody, be cool and keep learning.